We'll go ahead. We do have a quorum in place. Directors Wilson and Wezar are here, and Director Molina and myself. So let's move on. All right, let's go ahead. Murthy?
Yes, sir. The first item, number 28, a report by Caltrans director. He is not here yet, I think. So if you like, I can go ahead with the next item.
Yeah, why don't you go to the next item?
Okay. All right, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
Item number 29 is requesting approval by the committee and the board to authorize the CEO to negotiate and execute a contract modification to the existing contract with Regional Connector Joint Venture Partnership. This activity they are going to perform at this time is to continue supporting the preliminary engineering advancement so that we can get the full funding grant application filed and approved by the FTA. We have several major issues that we need to advance in terms of engineering and defining a better cost of the project. We will also be doing work on the utility relocations as an advancement and also mitigate all the risks that have been identified in our working with the FTA. So in this action, we are asking two things. One is to increase the Regional Connector Transit Partnership in an amount not to exceed by $9,296,670, and increase also the contract value from $23,309,794 to $32,606,464. And secondly, we are requesting modification authority increase from $10,226,337 to $13,451,337. All of these monies we are proposing is within the life of project budget. This is not outside the project cost. This was previously estimated. We just wanted some of the activities to be complete before we move into this stage. So I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Mine's soft, I was. Okay, any questions? And does this all address the issues that were raised by the Little Tokyo Business Association?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, any other questions? Not the item is before us. I understand that I can vote on this item or not?
Neither can I.
Huh? They're all soft, so we can vote. We'd like. If not, we can forward it to the full board. Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to move this to the full board? Mr. Wezar, is he okay to second it? We're going to move this item to the full board without. We can?
Yeah. Just move it.
Okay, we'll move the item.
Seconded by Mr. Wezar, without objection, so ordered.
Okay, thank you. The next item is item number 30. This is for the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor Project. I want to make a correction here in our board report. We made a mistake in making it as a shortlist. It is not shortlist. It is pre-qualified proposers, not the shortlist proposers. I apologize for the mistake. We will correct it for the full board. In this request, we are asking authorization to provide a bid stipend to those teams who are going to prepare the preliminary engineering and submit a bid prize but not win the contract. So we are proposing $1 million per team who will participate in that. Since we had decided to go with the design-build as the delivery for this project. We had taken into account in our life of project budget for such expense, so we are recommending that the board approve $1 million per team who is not successful. The winning team will not get the money.
Hey, the maybe you can, for everyone and for the public's consumption as well, that I raised this issue in my briefing with you, that it seemed pretty excessive, and I was told by you, and maybe you can explain, like you explained to me, that is standard procedure.
Yes, sir. It is not uncommon in design-build projects of this magnitude for the teams to spend anywhere between $4 to $7 million to put the engineering and work together with along with the estimators, and it does take a period of 4 to 6 months to work on it. In order to create a good, healthy competition, majority of these kind of jobs will have stipend for this. We have done this before here, right in this agency, to create the competition, and by allowing them to compete and paying them some amount of the in the order of maybe 30% of their expense, I think we are going to have a healthy competition and get better bids. So we strongly recommend that the board approve this.
Did you do this on the 405?
Yes, sir, we did.
Okay. All right, the item before us, then.
I'd like to ask some questions on this item.
Okay.
Mr. Murthy, what systems do we have in place to actually document what the stipend funds are being used for? Do we actually look at those the bills that they have, and how do we know as a board whether they are charging us at the standard rate or whether they're living in the Beverly Hilton's hotel on the suite, or whether they're riding, flying in using first-class air versus coach? What do we know? How do we know? And where do we get to look at that?
This is for this particular item, or I'm a little confused. If you can clarify it, I'd appreciate it.
Well, you're asking us to write a blank check for $1 million,
sir.
Correct?
Yes, sir.
And so I think... as a board member, I'd like to know, where's that money going?
Okay.
You would say it's going to this bidder or that bidder, but what is it actually being used for? My concern is that we are certainly trying to put ourselves in a position where we're competitive in our bidding process, and we're trying to do what we can to make sure we get the best candidates possible. But at the same time, I think we have a duty to take a look.
Yes, sir.
To see, what are they billing us for? Is it reasonable? Is it unreasonable? Is it standards for the industry? Are they billing us at a higher cost than what they really should be billing us? So my question to you is, what type of documentation do we get?
Wait a minute. Let's describe how it would work.
Yeah.
Upon submittal of a proposal, when they submit a proposal, we would then give them the $1 million.
Correct.
They do not submit an itemized billing.
Correct.
The reason we're putting the money on the table is to encourage more proposals, correct?
Yes, sir.
So there's no itemized billing, but there is a stipulation and a requirement that there be a proposal, the product of which we can use even if we don't make the award to them.
That's correct. It must be a very
responsible. But I think Director Wilson's question, that's all well and good, but how do we know we are getting a $5 million proposal versus a $500,000 proposal and you gave them $1 million?
Because staff has to do a very detailed evaluation of all proposals and make sure they've met all the requirements. The requirements are actually quite stringent. And if they're not responsive, they don't get the stipend.
So it's not automatic just because they submit.
Yeah. It is not automatic.
If the bid is not responsive, they don't get $1 million check.
Right, correct.
We have a very detailed questionnaire in order for them to pre-qualify, and after that they have to go through an engineering evaluation of the whole project and put prices and submit a formal bid in order to qualify for the stipend.
Yeah. So, again, I still didn't hear an answer to my question, really. It sounds like we're just giving them $1 million, and because they spent X number of dollars, and we think just to help them give us a bid that we should kind of give them something back Is that what you're saying?
It's more an incentive for them to do a serious engineering and estimating work so they can give a competitive proposal for us to evaluate. Because it's not uncommon for a job of this magnitude for the industry to spend $4 to $6-7 million, engage their engineers, engage their estimators, engage their construction people, go out and do the whatever preliminary engineering and survey, or even in some cases soil investigation, to make sure they can put a price which is competitive enough that can they can select the appropriate means and methods to deliver the job on time. So it's a lot of work involved, and it's not something uncommon in the industry.
And do they give you what their estimate is for what they actually incurred for this cost?
We don't ask them. All we ask from them is a proposal which we are going to evaluate that whether they have addressed all our testing.
But then who determines the amount?
Based on the industry surveys that we have done, based on our own experience here, since this is a $1.7 billion total value of this project, $1 million we felt is at least a minimum incentive that we can provide for them to be competitive and invest their energy into the project.
And this goes to the winning proposer, or it goes distributed through all of the ones that are bidding?
Winning proposer does not get any money.
Okay.
Because they are going to get the whole project to work on it.
Right.
But those who have competed and submitted the proposal that meets all our requirements, they will get $1 million per team.
And my question again is that the amount that you're recommending that we give, is there some kind of a schedule that is used, as industry standard schedule or something that you have used? I'm just trying to figure out why not 2 million or 3?
No, we could go higher. We didn't want to go higher. We thought at least $1 million will give them enough engineering assistance that they need in order to do their work and provide us a cost proposal. So we could go higher, but we didn't want to.
There is an industry standard, and we're at the low end of the range on the standard.
What is the standard, Mr. Ball?
It varies from like maybe 0.1 to 0.3%.
0.1 to 0.3?
Of the value of the work.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes. So is it industry practice to do this? Because I always assumed that if somebody's going to bid on a project or respond, they take the risk that they may not win, and that's part of doing business. So why would we compensate somebody? Because we could use their product, and there's valuable information there to use for the winning bidder? Or
no,
help me understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. The project delivery method that we have chosen is design-build. In the design bid-build process, we do the entire design. The contractors only have to put the price against the completed design. So they don't assume any design risk. They don't assume a lot of risk that we ask them to assume in a design build process. So what we are doing now is we are giving them documents at a very preliminary level and ask them to do enough engineering and give us a price that they will commit that they can deliver the project to that price. So that means they're taking a lot of risk to give us that price. So they need to do necessary engineering investigations and whatever they need to do so that they can give us a price. So that's why this process requires some incentive. And, for example, in the expo, they gave $5 million for two teams to do the engineering and then provide a bid, final bid on the project, and they selected one. So we are going with this process where we can select the qualified teams to do the...
And my last question is, so let's say it costs somebody $500,000 to prepare that.
Yes, sir.
And that's their cost, staff time, materials, everything else.
Correct.
How much do we pay for that now? We pay a discount in rate, right? Or do we pay the full value of that?
No, we are just paying for the only non-winning bidders $1 million total fee. That's all we are doing it. And they will be spending the rest of the money from their own marketing costs or whatever they spend.
I too.
Okay.
Other questions?
not the audience before.
Can I just
sure.
I had a question. It's my understanding that this is
normal. Although I don't ever remember it coming up on our construction agenda. Is it always on the construction agenda?
Only for the projects which we go in the design-build method.
No, I understand, but yes. They tell me that for the east side line, it was on here. So it was on the agenda? Is it something we approve all the time?
East side, I was not here at that time. My memory is it was also incentivized like that to pay for the non-bidder. Apparently, there was only one bid, which that was my understanding. I may be wrong on that. I can verify and get back to you.
It's just because it's having served on this committee for so long, I remember it.
I will get back to you then.
Unless it was part of a package of approvals that we may not have noticed that.
Sure.
But thank you.
Yep.
I have no other questions.
Okay. Giannis, before us?
Moved.
Is there a second? Carol, second. Well, okay. There is one abstention. Is that correct? One abstention. Director Wilson's abstaining. So ordered. Go to full board. But I think, Mark, the details on that, on previous experiences with that, because that's the reason I raised it. Same thing as Gloria. I was sort of surprised to see it. I know we did something like that on the 405, but
I will provide the details.
He will, but... All right,
Murphy, you're not leaving?
Director Wiesar, you want to take it? It's your motion and a bunch of others. Item 31. Staff report.
On the TOD.
I got you.
Good morning, members of the committee. Dwayne Martin, Mr. Chair, Mr. Leahy. This is an update on the January Motion 71 for the framework for improving and enhancing the rail stations. There's four initiatives that I want to go over today briefly in this high-level PowerPoint presentation. With the input that we got back from the initial responses from the board staff and responsible departments, we are going to give this brief overview today. If there's any questions that you have, I want to go through the PowerPoint presentation quickly, and I have everybody here that's responsible for the initiatives.
Maybe I have a question up front. Maybe you can address it in your presentation. The clarification that I need is particularly under 31A and 31B, it says it includes evaluating, assessing the Silver Line, including the stations on the Harbor Transitway corridor. Mm-hmm. The Silver Line is covered under 31D, the TOD grant program, but appears to be omitted from the main motion. So I want to make sure that we're not treating the Silver Line as a stepchild. And if the Silver Line is not part of 31A and 31B, then I will do a motion to include it in both. So you can address it for me. I appreciate it.
I don't know whether we did on this one, but we'll make sure that's the case.
Okay. Well, we would have to make an amendment to
I'm
the
just
report.
Telling you we'll just do it. We will comply with the chair's request.
Okay.
So does that mean it wasn't there?
I don't know, but
it is included.
We'll put it in.
It's included in an item from last month. We have funding to do signage upgrade improvements and park and rides at the Silver Line.
Okay, initially the signage and wayfinding for the blue and green lines. To begin developing a scope of work for the station and the station areas assessments, and those elements will be added to pedestrian and bicycle connectivity, customer amenities, signage and wayfinding. We'll inventory the needs and develop a station cost and develop an implementation strategy for board consideration. That's A. B is station park and ride security. Let's see. We want to enhance the security at the fixed guideway station parking lots through the intelligence-led policing program by implementing an automated license plate reader program that will give us license plate data on cars that enter and trucks that enter and exit the parking lots. This program will give us information on things like stolen cars that have been reported, suspicious activities, long-term parkers, post-investigations. Again, there's software in there that could also be used in the planning department for accurate counts of the parking lot usage. There is a spreadsheet in here that has $2.3 million committed already through a grant funding to do the initial 31 lots that have been identified to have the license plate reader program put in place. There's an additional slide on B for the CCTV surveillance. If additional cameras, including these 41 Caltrans lots, if we wanted to, there's a calculation that's been put together in a project that we could look at or through board recommendation if we want to go that direction. B2 is to identify best practices for facilities maintenance, power sweeping twice a month, graffiti abatement daily, and paint outs. Recommendations, annual cost estimates of $550,000, and this is for the 41 lots. That's budgeted. With provide power sweeping, graffiti abatement, and paint landscape cleanup for those lots. Work to begin soon. Additional service for lighting and backflow water device fencing and full service trimming may incur additional costs in the range of $400,000 to $500,000. B3 is a parking space utilization study. That utilization study is in draft. It should be completed next month, ready for the April report. And that's count and photograph parking utilization, strategies to enhance the utilizations. Some of the recommendations will be wayfinding and signage, use of technology through remaining capacity information, location of alternate available parking, and enhanced public information opportunities to partner with communities for joint parking use. B4 talks about the Metro currently operates 16,000 parking spaces countywide. That's inclusive of the 41 lots. Also, what's being evaluated is real estate staff is estimating that parking charge of $1 a day could yield approximately $2 million a year gross revenue. At the April committee meeting, staff will present consultant scope and budget proposals if that's requested and redirected by the board. Okay. Initiative C is noise abatement. Clear barriers on the Silver Line will begin testing the first quarter of FY13. We're examining a single recommendation strategy for the Green Line. Staff is using the same concept as the Harbor Transit Way with a paraglass sound wall built on SOLY. So there must be coordination with Caltrans on this because of the Green Line issues in the K-Rail. Funds for tests on the Green Line to be included in FY13 budget, which is secured. And Initiative D, Transit-Oriented Development Planning Grants. Expansion of the TOD planning grant. Round two included $1 million for Santa Ana Metrolink. Starting round three this fiscal year would retard the progress, and round two due to need to conduct additional research and outreach, and that's scheduled for approval next week. We recommend collaborating with the cities prior to that, and that the FY13 budget is proposed for it. Budget staff working on eligibility of the TOD for Measure R and the rail system improvements. And as I said, the budget proposal funding source for round three. So if you have next steps would be, of course, the oral report in April, and we'll address the work plans and the responsible parties and schedule for each of these elements. I know I went through that kind of quick, but if you do have any questions on any of those initiatives, we'd certainly be
happy. Yeah, I think, obviously, from my perspective, the schedule for each of the elements is going to be important. It's a good report. Just very frustrating that some of those items that have not been done on a regular basis for many, many years are just now part of a plan. Particularly, and as I've shared with Art, and he knows well aware that the neglect of the Green Line and Blue Line over the years is just something that is very, very difficult. And we have a good system. We get there, and then we just sort of let it sit there and rot. So hopefully your plan and a timeline will get on top of this and do it on a regular basis so that our system looks presentable. That's a huge complaint that comes into our offices a lot and on the cleanliness of the system.
Mr. Chair, I think our performance out there is not really excusable for a very long 15-plus years period. Our goal is to get those stations cleaned up, to get the landscaping reinstalled, to maintain it, to maintain the lighting, to get maintenance forces out there and security forces out there to maintain those stations, all those stations on all the lines in the condition which is appropriate.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I think this motion and the report will help us not only get more specific as to the types of things we should be doing to improve the areas around our rail lines, but also help expedite the planning for that, because as we opened up the Gold Line, a lot of the additional TOD plans that we've had for it are late in coming. And so while we have this great new Gold Line there and rail line, the promises we made to the community about the additional TOD improvements are late in coming. So this will help us think about any when we open future lines that they should be coming a lot closer to each other rather than waiting so late for the TOD improvements to come after the opening of that rail line. So the funding will help us expedite that when we're asking to put some of that funding that we're planning for future years to start thinking about that with their current lines.
Okay, thank you.
Agreed. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, I just asked staff. Can you guys identify yourselves and tell us what you do? Each the guys that are the three of you.
Okay. My name is Dwayne Martin. I do project management for the executive office.
My name is Tin Kwan, chief analyst for security.
I couldn't hear you. His mic is not working.
Tin Kwan, he's a chief analyst.
I'm Tim Lindholm, director of capital projects.
Okay. Have any of you gone out on the green line or the blue line?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
What would you say your overall assessment of the condition of the lines and the stations and maintenance is?
I think that, as Mr. Leahy stated, there are areas that need to be maintained better and brought back up to what our expectations are. There are efforts going on right now with the maintenance department and security to enhance that, and that's all part of this initiative as well. But there are efforts ongoing right now to try and address those issues as we speak. But
are you prioritizing them? I mean, as it relates, I mean, not just starting on Street A and working your way up the line, you go into the areas that are really bad first?
I believe Lonnie or Brady.
Brady Brandstetter, Director of Facilities Maintenance. We've started a program where we're spending over $100,000 just on the landscaping, for instance, on the Green Line. We've already started putting in large plans. We've actually, this is a second go-around on that. We first time put in, to save money, smaller items. We looked at it afterwards and said, you know, it doesn't really make a dynamic impact, so we've gone in with larger plans. We've got a program where we're going through the station with a fine-tooth cleaning comb, as it were. We are... part of the issue in the past has also been the perception with the lots that we do not maintain. That's why this is a very important project as we take those over. And we are, in fact, we've got a permit to go into the Caltrans lots and start doing the cleanup now. So that's just happened in the last couple of weeks. We will be doing a parking lot sweeping. We'll do the graffiti removal, and we'll do some landscape cleanup. Caltrans is still responsible, so we are supplementing their efforts.
So you say we will be. Does that mean you haven't yet, but you're going to?
Just in the last week, we've obtained the encroachment permit from Caltrans.
Okay. I'm not sure which of you would have the answer, but how many riders do we have per day on the blue line, and how many on the green line?
Blue is around maybe 80,000, and the green's
around
probably
40.
35, 40.
4 or 5?
35 to 40,000 daily boardings.
Would you say that those lines have more riders than any of the other lines that we have in operation today?
No, the red line's higher. The subway's
higher.
Red line? Red line's have red line more
purple.
Like 80,000?
It's over 100, 150.
It would be red, blue, green, gold, orange.
Red, blue, green, gold, and orange. Okay, thank you. So we have about, what did you say again for the blue line?
75, 80,000.
And the folks who use those lines are, you know, when I ride those lines, they appear to be workers and, you know, folks who are live in impoverished conditions, and it seems to me that we don't do a very good job of maintaining those lines as compared to some of the other lines. And I think there's a somewhat of a disparity in the maintenance and the upkeep. Those lines don't really have the improvements that some of the newer lines have, because we just it seems like we've done a better job on the newer lines than we did. If I start coming up and down the line, I know, for example, I've talked to some of the riders on the Manchester station, and they tell me that the maintenance is not that good, the elevators don't work that well, and so I'm not sure how much attention we're paying to them. But, you know, this motion, it takes to the heart of some of the things we need to do with some of our existing lines. The blue line and the green line really are a mainstay of what we're doing in terms of providing rail service to our customers. And I think it's important for us to, this motion was well thought out. It was on the board agenda last time around. Staff asked us to pull it so that you could take a closer look at it and come back this month. So I just want to ask all of you, are you in support of this, or do you think there's some flaws with what we're proposing here?
They're in support of it.
Absolutely in support of it.
If they want to work here, they're in support of it.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Wilson, you know, my second tour here is less than 3 years, and so there's a long gap in my knowledge. Here's what I do know. 3 years ago, we had subway stations which had not been cleaned in 15 years. They've been cleaned today. The subway is significantly improved. By the way, more work to be done. We have redeployed resources recently to the blue and the green, security resources as well as maintenance resources and the investment in landscaping. So there's an ongoing activity here. That applies to the fleets as well, by the way. The fleets were in...
It's part of one of your themes, right?
Absolutely. If the system does not appear to be safe, middle-class users aren't going to use it. So, and this, by the way, means cleaners at night. It means cleaning up unpleasant things that occur out there. It means making sure the landscaping and the paint jobs and the graffiti is taken care of. It means we have cops out there at night. By the way, the chief was here beginning around 6 months ago for the first time. The sheriff's deputies have assignments. They have shifts with destinations. It's just not go out forth and multiply. So there's been an ongoing increase in focus on all these issues. In addition to that, improved efficiency of operation on these lines by running shorter trains at higher frequencies. I don't have the reports yet, but I understand in 60 days, 75 days, nighttime ridership on the blue and the subway is way up because we improved the headways around December 1st. Revenues are up. So what you're seeing here is a much more focused investment in maintenance, reliability, and service quality.
Mr. CEO, I'm pleased to hear that this is important to you as well. I know it's one of your themes, and I certainly believe it's a high priority. Do you think that time is of the essence on this item and these items here?
Of course.
Okay. All right. So thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right.
We'll be back in April.
Okay. We look forward to an update and moving it forward quickly.
Thank you.
All right, so moved by Director Wiesar, seconded by Director Wilson without objection, so ordered. Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. We do have a speaker. I apologize. Worth Baker, is it? Worth?
Hi. Worth Baker. Yeah, I just want to say...
You can lift that mic up.
All right. I just want to say, the signage on the blue line, I think I mentioned in a previous meeting, it just, they have those red streaming signs, but it's pretty much just general information, like call the sheriff's department if you see something, have a nice day. If they could put the train, last train time when the train's coming, just use it for something useful. And again, just even a poster with the train times like Bart has, it doesn't cost much to print out. It's really useful for people. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would just add to that. I think, we just had some recent issues here, particularly on the blue line. And we really need to get on top of this customer notification, letting our passengers know what's going on. There have been a lot of delays and, with no real explanation. I don't know who wants to address that, but I just know that it's a big issue, and we're starting to get a lot of complaints on that as well, too. And we do have some of the tools necessary to let our customers know. And somehow we need, I don't know whether it's dispatch or what it is, but, you know, you just can't have these folks waiting around and not know what's going on. Do they have to go some other form of transportation? Bus bridges have been delayed. I mean, whatever it may be, we need to do a much better job of notifying our customers of delays or wait times or problems.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So when you come back, could you sort of put that in perspective, too, as it relates to the issue of notification and maintenance and operation?
Given the magnitude of that, may I suggest just a separate report? As it's a particularly important issue. It's going to become more important as the rail systems expand. So the efficient and rapid deployment of bus bridges, not just for our lines but for Metrolink, is going to become increasingly important. How we do that, how we communicate, how we work with other bus providers is all part of that. If that's
yeah, I mean that's fine. I mean and how we can, even though they're waiting for a bus bridge or something, and let them know that, but just to get the notification to a customer, we got a problem up either below or above. That's going to cause a delay.
Yes, sir.
So we'll make that a separate report coming
yes,
back.
Sir.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next.
Next is item number 32, Transit Project Delivery Report. Good morning again. We'll start with the I-405. Currently, I-405 project has finally gotten its right-of-way from the various entities that we have been dealing with, such as Getty, VA, GSA. So we have reached an agreement with all of these outside property owners. And as a result of that, now we need to sit down and negotiate with our contractor the changes and the delays that have occurred because of the right-of-way acquisition. And the contractor, based on some of these issues, has shown that he's going to be approximately 4 months delayed in the completion of this project. We are in the process of evaluating all the schedules and trying to mitigate this delay and bring this project back to May 31, 2013.
Mr. Chair, may I just ask a question as he's going through? What's causing the delay?
The right-of-way acquisitions. We have VA property. It took us almost 14 months to negotiate, and because of their current existing laws and their working with the Washington, D.C., so it took us a delay there. GSA has the same. They had to work with their fellow agencies up in Washington and San Francisco. So it has taken a long time. In this project, Director Wilson, Caltrans is the one, is the designer. Also, they're also the ones who are going to procure the right-of-way for us to get this job done. So Caltrans right-of-way group has been dealing with these agencies for a long time, and it has taken so far to get the approvals.
Okay.
In addition to that, we also have major utility relocations works that's ongoing. And City of L.A. has been very cooperative in extending whatever help we need. So we are trying to mitigate some of the delays because of the utility relocations. And, of course, the contractor has created some of his own problems with the wall failures. So we are dealing with that one and still trying to get this project on schedule.
They don't care.
If you don't have any questions on 405, can I move to the next?
Yeah, you move.
Yes, sir. Thank you. The next one is the Orange Line extension. This project is coming along fairly well. We do plan to open the line for revenue operations in June. We still have major work to do, but we are catching up with late night work and weekend work. But we are fairly confident we can open this in June. The next one is the congestion reduction demonstration project, the highway work that we are doing for the toll lanes, express lane toll. We are making good progress on this. We completed a majority of the work on the toll signs by putting all the CIDH piles. We are putting the new signs along the I-110 corridor. And we are also working with DWP to get some 47 power drop areas, and it's coming along well, but it's almost like a clockwork. Caltrans is doing the work simultaneously adjacent to us, and we are all doing work at night to keep the traffic moving. So if any one of us delay, the whole project gets delayed. So it's been a challenge, but Caltrans and us are trying to maximize our performance with schedule coordination and timing. Next one is the Universal City Pedestrian Bridge. This has been going for a long time. One of the reasons for the delay is the latest information we got from Universal about closure of our construction activity while the summer vacation. They want all the their patrons to have no obstruction at all to come to the their facility, so they are demanding not to work at certain periods of the year. So we are trying to finalize the schedule and evaluate the cost impact if we meet all their demands. We do have a commitment to get this bridge built within the cost that we have estimated.
And they've agreed to make up the difference?
No, sir. They have not offered anything other than demands of...
Well, I mean, if we have, it becomes cost prohibitive or something, if we have to stop construction, say, from Memorial Day to Labor Day, for their customers, which I understand,
yeah,
they need to be a part in that, right?
Right. That's what we are asking. But okay. Summer months, May to August, is when they give a maximum patrons visiting their park. So they want to make sure that we create no obstruction to their movement. So that's what we are working on.
May to August is some of the best construction months, too.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Okay. Next is the LAX Crenshaw project. We are already in procurement on this one. The requests for qualifications are out. There's an addendum going out next week on it, and we expect to provide them the bid documents by end of March, and then we'll go through the bid process. Next is the regional connector transit corridor. We are waiting for the FTA approval on the record of decision, hopefully by end of March. This has already been postponed twice by FTA, but this time it looks like we should be able to get it by March. And we have already sent the documents out for industry review, and that period is over. We are in the process of preparing requests for qualification on this particular project. The last one is the West Side subway extension. Here again, the FTA is reviewing our documents. And we recently had a risk assessment workshop with the FTA. Everything that we have done to date have been validated by FTA. We seem to have a common understanding of what the risks involved in this particular project. We don't see that as an issue. And we are developing plans for early construction contract packaging for some utility relocations on this project. The next one is a supplement to my report, basically to address the paint and body shop on Division 22. This is, as you recall, paint and body shop was to be built by Exposition in their maintenance facility in Santa Monica. There was a lot of objection to that, and at that time it was agreed we will put them in Division 22. So just to give you an update as to where we are on this, we have this. Basically, the paint shop is going to handle any graffiti that comes on the cars. Also, any body repair work that we do needs to get painted. So it's going to be get done in this Division 22. It is a separate capital project funded by Expo 1. Facility is being implemented by Metro, and we're supposed to complete it by 2015. This project was cleared through the categorical exemption in November of 2011. There is some community opposition from the Fusion Homeowners Association regarding the paint shop being in the area. We are meeting with the community and trying to resolve those issues with them. And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Any questions?
I do.
Okay.
Ms. Murthy, on your report that shows project schedule.
Yes, sir.
This slide, can you... you have on there the engineering design. You also have the major construction, but I don't see the revenue operating dates. In your future schedules, project delivery schedule, can you please put the operating date?
Yes, sir.
As proposed, at least we'll have some guidance on that. And I'd like to go back to a couple of the items that you talked about earlier. The Orange Line, a couple weeks ago, you joined the mayor, myself, and a number of our other staff at that Orange Line Lassen Bridge. Today I heard you say that the project is on schedule. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. In fact, we are ahead of schedule.
Ahead of schedule. What was the original schedule then?
Pardon me?
What was the original schedule?
August of 2012.
And now?
It's June.
First, middle, last part of June?
It will be somewhere middle to later part of June. We still have some major work items that we are working on, and we are going to finalize that with the DWP, CDFLA, and the contractor, and then we'll be able to give you a firm date.
Now, I know a couple months ago you mentioned that you were having some challenges with some of the utilities relocation. Have those been resolved?
We are working on it. We still have DWP to do certain items of work. It so happens that we need to have our contractor, DWP. One comes in, does his work. The other party comes in, does their work. So it's extensive coordination involved.
So you're working on it. I don't want you to come back a month or two later and tell me that you had some problems that you didn't tell us about today, and then we don't get the revenue operating date as you're projecting today.
At this time, based on where we are today, we are fairly confident we can open it in June.
Well, excuse me, but the director just said he doesn't want us to sit on this for 2 months and then come back here with a blown deadline. So if there becomes a threat to the project deadline, I'm inferring you'd like to know about it as soon as possible.
Well, I'd like to know, and I think you need to resolve it. This is not a major rail line. It's not a subway. It's not tunneling. You know, I've had this discussion with you before. This is a fairly easy kind of project if you compare it with some of the other types of projects we do. Would you agree?
That's correct. Yes.
Right, so engineering-wise, it shouldn't be that difficult to do.
Yeah.
And it troubles me when I hear you say, you repeated again today the utility issues, and I know the City of Los Angeles has made themselves available to work with your folks on those utility relocations. So if that is an issue, you need to let the mayor know, you let our staff know. We'll get on and make sure our side is doing what we need to do. But I just don't, you know, it's easy to point fingers at others, but I'm holding you accountable as I'm holding the CEO accountable to keep our projects on track and to let us know if you have a problem in advance and not just drop it on us at the last minute.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to say we have had those discussions indeed with the mayor's office and with DWP. We have offered to hire people and to deploy them to the City of L.A. to expedite their hiring process. We have told them we will do whatever we need to do to provide them with the resources, including paying the salaries of individuals to do the approval work that we require. Correct?
Yes, sir.
And are you going to need that help?
When they ask for it, we'll provide it.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I didn't hear you talk about it, and it may not be under your purview, but I know we're doing our trial run for the Expo line, Expo 1.
That will be the next report, but by Brian Bordeaux, he will do that.
And the Expo 2, where are you at in your bidding process for that?
Expo 2, also Brian will address on that one.
Today?
Yeah, today, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, I was just saying, and in your next report, too, I think you do, on this project schedule, on item 34, it shows when it says construction, major construction, the end of that is, in effect, your proposed completion date of projects. Right, so we do have that information. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Robin O'Hara, and I'm a project manager in marketing.
Morning.
And I'm here to talk about. Let me get this. I'm here to talk about Director Kanabe's request to talk to introduce an education plan to combat human trafficking. This campaign is to help customers recognize distressed behavior and to report it in a safe manner. We are going to be using this campaign to as a customer education campaign, similar to what we did with the H1N1 campaign. It's for customer service and customer awareness. So we're expecting the campaign to be completed by May 31 of 2012, and we should be starting it by the end of this month or early next month. The campaign will include posters in the rail stations, onboard brochures, a system drop, basically, a web module on Metro.net that will have information, stories on the source, El Pasajero, and Facebook. We'll do e-blasts to employee transportation coordinators, and we'll also have an item in the Metro briefs. We're hoping this will help people know the signs of distress and help identify potential problems and possibly even save some lives. So that actually concludes my report. We'll report again next month on the campaign, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I think the other issue is related to cameras, using that as a vehicle as well to validate these particular issues. Mr. Leahy actually had an incident the other day that he reported to the police. Yes,
I was just telling Don that this issue, that his initiative here has heightened my awareness of this issue. The other day, I was walking down the tunnel, actually on the way to catch a train at Union Station, and I had not much time to get there. I noticed a couple walking in one direction with a woman between them, and the woman was clearly incapacitated in one fashion or another. I don't know what was wrong with her, but she was clearly incapacitated. She could not stand on her own. And so I actually walked by her, and I looked back, and I thought about this initiative, and I thought, wow, could this be a kidnapping or something? And so I got a guard and asked and pointed them out, and the guard intervened, and I don't know what happened after that. But I would not have done that. I wouldn't, you know, I might not even have noticed it, except for this issue. So I think, in fact, I've asked Roger to ensure that we've provided training to the police and the security guards over there, as well as our own personnel, to be on the alert for such potential cases. Maybe it's not likely to happen, but it could happen, and we need to be on the alert.
I mean, that's one of the ways that they do it. They drug-induce them and just drag them along, and they'll tell somebody, well, they're sick, we're taking them to the doctor or something like that, when they're really just taking them to their pimp. And so, anyway, I appreciate the report. And I understand we're going a little beyond what we originally started with, because we do need posters, you know, something really visible that really grabs our attention. And I appreciate that and look forward to the follow-up reports next month.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Item 34.
Good morning. Brian Boudreaux, Program Management Department. Just as a reminder, we do this report to the Construction Committee on a monthly basis. We also provide briefing to your staff on kind of an independent assessment of where we are with the various major construction projects here at Metro. So that's the intent for this presentation. So just wanted to make that remark before we go into it. This is a summary schedule. As Director Wilson pointed out, this shows the beginning in, of the engineering effort and the completion of construction for each of these major construction projects. The end of the blue bar is generally when the revenue operation occurs for each of these projects, and we have detailed pages on each one that are actually in engineering, and we have that information. There's nine of these projects that are actually either in engineering or construction, and there's another half a dozen that are Measure R projects that are still going through preliminary planning, so we don't have real solid schedules on those yet, but we show them here for reference purposes. First project, the Orange Line Extension, and from a budget and schedule standpoint, a very good result on this project. We're actually forecasting a significant underrun on this project, and we're actually looking at it right now to see, in fact, if that underrun might be perhaps even more than we expected. And then, as Mr. Murthy indicated, we're working to accelerate this project to June of 2012, and it looks favorable at this point. But if at any time that seems to be in jeopardy, we'll certainly inform the board of our concerns and risks in those areas. Next project, the Crenshaw LEX project. We now have a approved life of project budget for this project from the board of $1.7 billion. We just completed a risk assessment on the project, and we're now looking at the results of that. But at this point in time, there's no cause for concern either on the cost and schedule of this project. There's certainly some risks still associated with a project of this size and complexity, but it's still early before we could indicate whether, in fact, there's any cause for concern in either of these areas.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I see under your potential risks, you know, the Leimert Park Station. What about the Westchester?
Of course, in the same light, if, in fact, there's additional scope, whether it's an additional station or any other items that might get added to the project, that could create some additional financial pressure on the project.
Right. No, I understand that, but, I mean, I just am surprised not to see it there because it was the board asked for it to be put there.
Yeah, that was an oversight on our part, which that should have been included in the report as well.
So next time, right?
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Wilson.
Yes. Have we done all the borings that we need to do on the portion that's going to be underground from Expo to near Vernon and 48th, 49th?
Yes, we have. We've done the geotechnical to about 100% for that stretch. Even though it's design build, we did take the borrowings of geotechnical work to a much higher level, about 100%.
So I recall a few months ago we had some issues with, I think it was a 210 freeway. We were doing some work on it, and it was a sound wall, and we hadn't done borings close enough to each other, and so we incurred a number of large boulders that were unexpected and not anticipated. So can you restate again what measure of drillings we've done and how far they're apart, just so I have a better level of comfort?
Again, we do the borings, say, every 500 feet. I mean, there is still some risk, but we have taken the geotechnical work, as I indicated, to a very high level. So we've taken it to the same level as if it actually was design bid build. So, again, Metro takes the risk on geotechnical, so we did take it to a very high level.
And as far as gases and water table and all that kind of stuff, there is no issue that you can foresee that would be a potential risk here?
There are some pockets we found on Crenshaw near Coliseum. The gas is not under pressure, though, so it's not like, say, the West Side Project through the Liberty Tar Pits area.
So you don't deem that to be a potential risk?
There's always a risk, but we would classify it as a low risk.
As compared to these here that are here identified here, these are high risk?
No, I would classify this as low risk.
No, not, let me make sure I'm clear. The ones that I see in front of me say potential risks, right?
Yes, all the ones listed up there, we're actually working them through right now, and we're looking for a closure of those before we actually award a construction contract later this year.
Right. And what you just mentioned about the I think you mentioned the gas pockets or whatever near Coliseum, is that at the same risk level as you see these here?
Yes, because again, we have detected some gas near Coliseum, but there's a gas station nearby, so that's probably where it's coming from. But again, the gas is not under pressure, so it's what we would consider to be a low risk.
So you don't think it should be on this list?
No.
Could be an oversight. No. Maybe you should have put it on. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I just don't want to have you come back later, or any of you come back later and say, oh, by the way, we discovered that there was this issue with this underground geotechnical whatever, and we didn't know about it before, and you're not letting us know now.
Okay,
so if it is a potential risk, you know, just say, you know what, it's an oversight, we'll add it or whatever. But I just don't want you to say this is the risk level and then tell us later that there was something else.
Understood, sir. Mm-hmm. We'll go back next month and reevaluate, and if there's more risk, we'll put them on the list.
Thank you. Mr. Boudreau.
He
hadn't finished his report. Oh. He was just going through
it. You finish on Crenshaw? I can move on to the next project. West Side Subway Extension. At this point in time, we've got a $5.6 billion budget, which is reflective of our most current estimates, and it also reflects our request to the Federal Transit Administration for funding for the project. We are running into a bit of a schedule issue on this project. We're getting a lot of late comments from the Federal Transit Administration on the environmental document, which is causing some concerns. So we had hoped to get this the final environmental document to this board, to our board, in March, but that now looks like it's going to be end up being in April, which is going to push out the record of decision in this project to May of this year. So that is a point of concern that that we wanted to mention.
How much delay may that cause?
At this point in time, there's no overall impact to the total project schedule, but it's now making it more challenging to get into final design for this project when we had hoped, which is the summer of this calendar year. So it is putting a lot more pressure on the remaining activities to get us started on final design.
And I know a number of months ago there was an issue about our agency not really clearly identifying the preferred alignment. Have we gone beyond that? And the FTA knows? Yes?
Martha may want to comment, but since we made the initial submittal last summer, we've gotten 8 rounds of questions, which we've amended the report around 8 times. We are awaiting their record of decision, which we hope to get momentarily. I think the FTA would argue, if they were here, with some merit, that they've been actively pursuing 2 projects, the subway and the connector. But right now, we have hit some slippage on the subway because of awaiting the FTA concurrence. And by the way, we've also offered to fund FTA positions to get the work done.
Thank you.
Next project, Regional Connector, is another one of our New START projects, so we're following the same type of process with the Federal Transit Administration. We've submitted an application for funding for about 50% of the project, total cost about $1.4 billion. This month, the board is going to consider the environmental document for that project, and we hope that about a month afterwards we'll receive the record of decision from the Federal Transit Administration, which will allow us to continue to hopefully progress into final design in the middle of this current year. So no particular areas of concern on the regional connector at this point in time.
Okay.
Congestion reduction demonstration program. On the budgetary standpoint, we're still staying at $291 million for this project. There's a number of elements in it, and we've included 4 of the major aspects of this project, of which we're tracking the budget and the schedule. At this point in time, we're not reporting any slippage in the schedule for this project either. But as you can see from the list below, there's a lot of potential risks on this project. It's a very complex project that requires a lot of interfaces with a multitude of agencies. So we wanted to at least let you know that there are these issues that are out there, and we'll be informing you of them as we go forward, as well as Mr. Murthy in his presentations, as what those risks are, and if at any point in time that's going to cause any impact to the budget and schedule, we'll bring it to your attention.
Well, the question I had, maybe you could give us an example, because this, you know, these kinds of things keep popping up all the time. But with Caltrans and their desire for good transportation and movement of people and goods, and LADOT and the MTA, You have down there the final design for the Adams Boulevard Bridge widening has been delayed due to Caltrans and LA Dot late agreement on the final. What takes so long between two public agencies to figure out a configuration that they could, both can work with? And I know it says here that you're working closely with both entities to expedite the completion and mitigate any schedule. But what kinds of things make that kind of an issue happen? In other words, you would think that three public agencies, all trying to enhance transportation and movement of people and cars and goods, could come to some quick resolution instead of a bureaucratic stretch out.
You want to tackle that one, Murthy, or
you want to take that?
Mr. Murthy, I think I can give you more specific answers to that question.
I don't know whether I have any specific answer, but what we have been working on and be somewhat successful, for example, on the 405 project, even though it's a Caltrans project, even though the city of LA is involved in majority of the design, our approach was to build an integrated project management office where Caltrans people have moved in, City of LA has sent in their people, and we have our staff, and we also have the contractor staff, so where we can resolve the issues in one under one roof. So I think that model seemed to be helping us. And Caltrans, of course, have a different process of getting their projects through from engineering to construction, whereas we take whichever the best project delivery method we can get to accelerate the project delivery. So this is where we need to work together. And Caltrans' funding scenario is, it spreads across many years, whereas here at MTA we say we are going to build this in such and such a time frame. So there is some conflict, and these are the things we are trying to work it out.
But I mean, if you have everybody under one roof and trying to solve these problems, you have them there for the 405 and that issue, can we not just deal with the Adams Boulevard Bridge at the same time? I mean, I just, you know, we're always told that, you know, we're going to get this worked out, and it just keeps coming back. Every project. Mm-hmm. Every project.
Yes, sir.
It's LA Dot, MTA, Caltrans. I mean, my gosh. And we all have the same motivation to improve transportation. I mean, can't that be brought up? I mean, or you just have to talk about the 405. You can't. Don't mention Adams Boulevard today.
Now, as CEO said, we met with the mayor's office regarding DWP. You know, they perform their conduit work. They perform the interception work, cable pulling and all. They do it with their own forces. So if they get a couple of projects simultaneously, like what we are putting them on, they do have resource issues. And that's what the CEO met with the general manager of the DWP to offer help, whatever help we can give them to get them on board with our schedule.
Mr. Chairman, I can address the specific instance of the Adams Boulevard Bridge, and that's a matter of our priority is not the same as their priorities, and so we don't have an integrated project office for that. We're trying every way we can, but it is a matter of resource allocation, and what we consider to be a priority, those two agencies may not consider to be of the same priority. So we try to work with their constraints and work things out.
Not a good answer.
No, it isn't. It's not a happy situation. I think I would add to that they each have faced personnel and budget reductions, while we've undertaken an expanded and aggressive capital program, and so. It isn't just a matter of them not wanting to work with us. Well, that's why we offered to hire and detail people to the city. So we just have to keep at it.
Okay. Oh, same old, same. All right. Anything else?
Yes. I'll try to make it quick, though. I-405 project, Mr. Murthy went into some of the challenges in this project already. We have right now a forecasted delay in the project that we're trying to mitigate with the contractor. For the reasons stated below in the risk area. From a budgetary standpoint, we're not forecasting an increase, but we're going through kind of a reassessment right now to see where we're at to make sure if in fact, there's adequate funds to complete the project.
Well, when you say you're not expecting an increase, wasn't it the last report you gave at the last meeting the potential. Didn't we approve some additions as it related to the wall, some other issues that might take it over budget?
It's a possibility with the provisional sums being inadequate to cover some of those areas. There's a possibility that that could impact the total project budget. Thus far, they've used available contingency funds to cover those costs. But we have to make sure that there's enough contingency to cover other risks that still remain
okay.
in the project.
All right. Thank you.
Next, I'd like to touch upon the construction authority, starting with the Foothill extension. I've got Chris Berner with me today, who's the project director for this project. I'll just start it off by saying that at this point in time, the budget and the schedule for the project are still on track, and we have some positive news on this project in terms of litigation, and I'll let Chris cover that a little bit.
Can we go into the next slide? Good morning. We do have some very positive news with regard to the litigation. There were several lawsuits that we were wrestling with, somewhere in the neighborhood of five or six. Last week, we reached an agreement with the private property owner who filed those lawsuits against us and other parties. The settlement agreement basically gives us the final piece of private property that we needed for the maintenance facility for the project. It also dismissed all litigation associated with the project. So that was a huge milestone. We have one final piece of property or one final property owner that we need to acquire property from. That is the successor to the Monrovia Redevelopment Agency. With the dissolution of all redevelopment agencies throughout the state of California, we are now working with the successor agency to that agency.
The city of Monrovia, are they a successor agency?
They are the successor agency, yes. And we are also pursuing parallel paths. We're working with the successor agency, and we are also pursuing eminent domain. We are very hopeful that we can obtain that property at or before this March 14th hearing. We're working with the city to pursue a friendly condemnation process, and that seems to be going in the right direction, at least right now, although not yet finalized. Hopefully by the end of next week, we will have some positive news, and we'll be heading shortly thereafter, we'll have the property. The I-210 bridge construction is going very well, and our alignment design build contractor is pursuing, progressing the designs, going well, and we have obtained approval from the PUC for all public crossings on the project. So that concludes the presentation, unless there are any questions.
Just quickly, what about the designer-builder reporting 35-day delay? Are they going to be able to pick it up?
Yeah, that is for the I-210 bridge contract. There's a five-and-a-half-month float between that, when they need to complete that, and when we turn it over to the other
okay.
contractor. So there's no delay to the project. It's looking doubtful that they will be able to pick that up, but there's no impact to the project.
All righty. Thank you.
Next, I'd like to cover the exposition projects, starting with everybody's favorite, Phase 1. We still, of course, are forecasting a overrun on the project budget-wise. We're still trying to assess what that the magnitude of that would be, but right now we're forecasting about a $2.3 million increase, inclusive of any claims that might be forthcoming. Then from a schedule perspective, we had previously reported that we had hoped that the project would be ready for revenue operations in the first quarter of this calendar year. It now appears more likely that that will occur in the second quarter, most likely in April of this year, with the segment to Culver City opening up a couple months after that time frame. To discuss the project a little further, Eric Olson, the project director for Expo, is here.
Thank you. Morning. At this point in time, we still have not granted substantial completion to our contractor. Most of that is basically documentation that he still owes us for the project. The line itself is up and functioning and operating. Reported before, we've been running trains from 23rd Street Station to La Cienega since October. As I reported last month, we were having some issues with the signaling system at the junction with the Long Beach Blue Line. We were able to get those resolved last month, and with that, Metro has now been able to go into full pre-revenue operations as of January 23rd. So, well, we have issues that we're working with the signals as far as, you know, troubleshooting versus, you know, issues with the ability to safely operate trains at the junction. We continue to do that, and we continue to do it safely, and we continue to work with any problems that we have with the cab signaling system on the vehicles. But at this point in time, we haven't identified anything from a safety standpoint.
I think we're referring to the service break that occurred earlier this week. We had a very serious service break on the Blue Line due to a problem with the junction with the subcontractor.
Yes, and we're working to make sure that doesn't happen again. He did not properly do identification. What's that? Pardon me?
It's a real good idea to make sure.
That didn't happen again.
It won't happen again. It won't happen again. So we're working closely with Metro now to come up with a solid path forward so we can set a revenue operations date for the alignment. We're still working on the remaining elements of the project out at the western end, namely the Farmdale Station and Culver City stations. As Brian reported, we're forecasting a $2 million overrun, plus any contractor claims or other unknowns, but we also continue to work to pursue third-party reimbursables and other potential cost savings on the projects to try to help balance the budget. And that concludes my report on Phase 1. If there's any questions.
For this Expo Line 1?
It hasn't been set yet. We're working with Metro to determine that. Ultimately, that's a Metro decision.
Well, it's not just a decision. As of a couple of days ago, for the last month or two, we meet nearly weekly with the Expo Authority. As of Monday of this week, I believe it was, we had around 17 items which required resolution before we could start revenue operations. We are not yet cleared by the PUC or the fire department to carry passengers. So although I agree with the tone and tenor that we're making progress, I'm hopeful that in the next 10 days or so we can set a revenue operations date. We haven't done one yet for the reasons I've just outlined. On the 17 items, the drop-dead issues, we are making progress on all of them. The bulk of them are going to be resolved in the next couple, 3 weeks.
So what does that tell us?
It tells us what I've just said to you, that in the next 10 days or 2 weeks, we'll be able to set an opening date.
Oh, I didn't hear you say that. So you're saying that in the next 10 days, you'll be able to give us a date?
That is my hope.
Okay. It's our goal, too. And we're working closely with both the PUC and the fire department to determine the path forward to get these dates set so we have confidence that we'll be able to get everything done in time to open it up the day we say we're going to open it up.
Rick and I sent a letter to the PUC on Monday, I believe it was, trying to address issues at the junction. We don't believe that they're satisfied with that, so we're going to continue to work on that.
Well, once you resolve these issues that you're talking about, do you think they will be opening up this quarter, next quarter?
My hope would be that we would be able to open up in late March. It may be early April, but I hope late March.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Last project, Expo Phase 2. This is the segment of the project going from Culver City to Santa Monica. Thus far, no issues to report either on the budget or the schedule side. We're still at $1.5 billion for the project with a revenue operations date in 2016. Eric will go through some of the current activities in the project.
As far as the project goes, we still continue to move on with our final design of the maintenance facility. We completed preliminary engineering basically in December of last year, and so now we've initiated the final design with our designer. Our bridge contractor for the bridge over Venice Boulevard is in the process of beginning utility relocations along Venice Boulevard. One of the precursors to doing that is the approval of the PSR-PR with Caltrans. That's now circulating for final signature. We've submitted the documents to receive our encroachment permit, so we're hopeful that work will start towards the end of this month. Our main design-build contractor continues to advance the design. He's made 60% design submittals for the civil work in the city of L.A. and has completed the Expo Westwood Station. We've gone through and done our structural analysis on the Kenner Canyon storm drain, which is a very large storm drain that runs down Colorado Boulevard. Our results are showing that we think that it's structurally sound. We're actually going to meet with LA County Flood Control this afternoon to discuss those results and obtain their concurrence. And the others, we're continuing to work very, very closely with Edison and LA Department of Water Power on overhead power line relocations to make sure that that work stays on schedule and doesn't impact our completion date. And that concludes my report.
Questions on phase two? Okay, thank you.
And that concludes our report.
Thank you very much. I believe we have one item left, is that correct? Or do we have
a public comment?
Public comment? Do we? Okay, excuse me, on Worth Baker.
Worth Baker, yeah, just two things quickly. I've noticed, like, on the gold line where the splays are hung, they're hung parallel to the tracks and not perpendicular to the tracks. And you can see them from the train, like the schedule for the train, but if you're already on it, you really don't need to see it. And I talk to people on the platform, we have just no idea why they were hung parallel to the tracks and not perpendicular where people on the platform could actually see them. And I would hope that if you haven't already constructed some of the stations that you would take this, I would think, obvious thing into consideration. My other point is, I see, you know, these billions of dollars for construction, and I'm all for constructing stuff, but the rail lines we already have, we're not running at full capacity, we're not running 24 hours, and you could probably run the red line for like $2 million a year, you know, full, just, full, you know, 24 hours all the time. I think probably $2 million probably for each of the other lines. So maybe like $10 million a year, you could run the whole system would be 24 hours, and you know, for $10 million, that's a lot of people would start writing it, whereas we're spending billions on stuff that, you know, I mean, we should build it, but we should run what we have first.
Thank you. All right. All right. Item 34. 35, excuse me.
John Walsh has a heart attack. We got a replacement.
Okay, I'm Rob Ball, and this is Linda Bybee. We're going to give you an update on the community benefits program that was first brought to the board last summer in response to a motion from Director Thomas. It looks like the PowerPoint didn't get up there. I believe you have hard copy in front of you, so Linda and I will just kind of walk you through the presentation, if that's acceptable.
Yes.
Okay. The community benefits program update covers a safety plan, a traffic mitigation plan, PLA and small business enterprise participation plan, business loss mitigation plan, what we call the Crenshaw Curve, which is a streetscape landscape improvement plan between MLK and Lumberg Park. For the safety plan, this covers the Park Mesa section, the at-grade section on the Crenshaw project. What we look at as far as documents we have to do is a safety, security, and management plan. We look at safety measures we incorporate through design. We also follow the PUC General Order 164D, which is a fairly rigid process we go through with PUC and the local jurisdictions. And lastly, we are developing a construction safety awareness program. So for the safety, security, and management plan update, we have completed what we call a preliminary hazard analysis that was completed for the PE phase. This analysis identified potential hazards. It identifies design mitigations, and it will be finalized by the design builder during the construction phase. We also have completed what we call a system security and safety checklist, and again, it will be finalized by the design builder for final design. We also, as part of the CPC process 164D, we do a very detailed rail crossing hazard analysis report that has now been completed and has been issued to the PUC that will actually review it and provide comments back to Metro. And again, the hazard analysis report does require input from the local jurisdictions. As far as safety measures through design, we are still evaluating the use of flashing red LED lights in order to help control the left turning movements across the trackway. We also are looking and working with LADOT and PUC to make the train warning signs as visible as possible to vehicle traffic. We also
just for the public, if anyone would like a copy of this, make sure they're available since they're not, okay. You know, it's not up on the screen. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
We also look at pedestrian signals with countdown timers, and we're looking at wider crosswalks with refuge areas. Additional measure under consideration that we've been working with LADOT and PUC is to put fencing outside the track, very similar to what you see on the Expo line. And this would only be through the at-grade Park Mesa Heights section. For construction safety, staff is completing a safety awareness curriculum. We will actually do an outreach, extensive outreach that community relations will actually undertake to provide schools and facilities with understanding of construction prior to construction starting. And lastly, during the construction phase, community relations team will ensure access and safety measures are in place and the contractor is in conformance. Traffic mitigation, we continue to work with LEDOT and the PUC to balance safety and traffic flow. And we're working with the City of Los Angeles to identify funding to incorporate roadway widening improvements at Slauson to improve the level of service in the year 2030. And lastly, we are carrying the Slauson improvements as an option in the procurement documents.
Okay, my part of the report. The project labor agreement and small business enterprise participation. With the passage by this board of the project labor agreement of January 26th, there is, of course, a very intense interest in the program out in the communities. We have added a regional communications manager to liaison what these opportunities are with the community-based organizations and ensure that the parameters of this program are understood and what the pathways to this program would be. Of course, for each of the projects, the project jobs coordinator would be the implementer for each of the projects that qualifies for a PLA. The Department of Economic Opportunities here in this organization continues to conduct a very robust program for outreach to the business community through Meet the Primes, workshops, online registrations, and presentations to stakeholder organizations. On the business loss mitigation, business mitigations during construction are something that need to be evaluated well in advance. It is very important to us to understand what each of the needs of the businesses in direct impact from construction have. And to that end, we conduct a door-to-door survey of the businesses, and that will begin to take place within about a month. This will lead into the traffic management plan and construction zones, management of contractor parking, maintenance of access, wayfinding and signage, and in cases where we have to adjust access, we will facilitate those resolutions in advance with the impacted party and the contractor. As I noted earlier, the construction relations conducting the door-to-door surveys will also include the nature of the business, the client base, access for patrons, deliveries, employees, and current methods of advertising or attracting business. We will be developing a matrix of business assistance programs, and some of those may include programs that are available through the Small Business Association and SCORE, which is an organization that provides guidance to businesses through retired executives. Local business marketing support, online coupons, banners, and signage are all part of the typical program that Metro conducts for these mitigations. Through the Crenshaw Leadership, LAX Leadership Council, we are fully engaged with the council. We have had our third quarterly meeting. The Crenshaw Leadership Council has identified moderator leads for each of the working groups that we have defined as pods. We will be having a February 23rd meeting that will involve a PLA Construction Career Pathway 101 session, and we expect that that will be well attended by community-based organizations. We have also completed, through our consultant team, a draft report on best practices for small business construction mitigation programs, and we are working with the consultant team to develop a final draft on that because we want to make that presentation come forward to the board. It would have some considerations not only for this project but for other projects as we take a look at what best practices should be. Thank you.
Actually, there's one last item, real quick.
No, I just kidding.
Out of time? Shall I continue? Okay. As far as the streetscape plan, we have been working very closely with City of L.A. and CRA on the streetscape project along Crenshaw Boulevard between King and Vernon. We have actually agreed on the limits. Now, as one point shows there, we're not sure yet about the Prop 1C funding that will allow that project to move forward, but we are obviously hoping it does. And we're also developing a wayfinding signage to improve.
I'd defer to the City of L.A. folks. Is that an approved project under the CRA? Is this the redevelopment piece?
This is a
link. CRA being the redevelopment agency?
Yes, CRA, yes.
So is this a ground and a shovel thing, or is it an approved expense? I mean, what are the impacts on this project, do you think, as it relates to funding?
I don't know the answer to myself, but we are trying.
I mean, because you guys didn't become a successor agency.
We didn't become a successor agency, and there were some projects that were definitely moving forward, but there were a number of them that we have on a list that we're not sure what's going to happen to them. So if this project is on that list, it's uncertain. So it might be worthwhile to look at that. To look at that list that we've compiled for ourselves that we don't have an answer to, whether we will complete it or not and have the successor agency complete it for us.
And the only reason I raise it is obviously, you know, that's a drawing board kind of an issue that you're going to really have to look at other options should that not be approved.
Okay, so we'll find out.
Yeah, we will find out. Okay, lastly, next steps. We have submitted the hazards report I talked about earlier. We have what we call field diagnostics coming up with PUC in the local jurisdictions. We respond to comments. We will file completed exhibits. We're looking for the PUC process to be actually completed and signed off prior to awarding a contract this fall. And lastly, we'll complete business surveys second quarter of this year. Again, I apologize again for this being loaded up late. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else? If not, any further questions? If not, we are in adjournment, being no public comment. Thank you.